And for me, the essence of good leadership is to be rebellious and respectful, to rebel against the statu quo, to create a new, better future, and to use respect as the base of everything that you do.
A very warm welcome to today's Lightwolf Leadership Podcast. My name is Stefan. I am a leadership catalyst and your podcast host. And today I have a huge pleasure, the huge pleasure to have a conversation with one of the most respectful rebels I have ever met. It's my pleasure to introduce to you Juan Pablo Velasquez. Juan Pablo, welcome to the Lightwolf Podcast.
Thank you very much, Stefan. Super happy to be here.
Great. Juan Pablo, you initially qualified in law in a law school, then did a Master of Business Administration, followed by a Master of Management from Tulane University. Today you lead HR for Fives, one of the largest and oldest fruit companies in the world, with nearly 15,000 employees across Latin America, the US, and Europe. Originally from Colombia, you are now based in Switzerland, and right from our first conversation when exploring a cooperation, I felt your clarity and your impact on me. You really made an impact on me. And that's why we are here together today. So you say about yourself that you lead with clear principles, with bold conversations, and deep respect for people. You and I believe in cultures where autonomy, connection and accountability truly coexist, where people can laugh out loud and deliver outstanding results. And I just love that attitude. And when you mentioned that as a way to amplify your purpose, you wrote a book, and the book is entitled Respectful Rebels. And I just learned in our pre-conversation, it's now existing in English since a month. I'm going to buy it still today. A book that challenges the status quo without losing your soul. It just intrigued me. I thought we should have an interview, and I feel really grateful that you invested time today to share your experience with the Lightwolf community out here. So I'm really glad you're here, Juan Pablo.
So I'm super glad to be here, Stefan, and thanks a lot for that generous introduction as well.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, I mean it. I felt touched when we met, and I felt inspired when I read the title. So I'm really curious now, as is the audience, to find out more. But let's start with you as a person and when you were young. You have kids and I have kids. I'd like to explore and understand who or what did you want to become when you were a child?
I wish I could say like I wanted to be an astronaut or a police officer or something, but the truth is I had no clue, Stefan. I loved drawing, so perhaps an artist. But then when I started growing up, I really loved reading and writing. So when the opportunity came and the first time I went to the university to choose my career, like I need to pick up a template saying which career I was going to opt for, I just randomly picked up law school, right? Just because it said I like reading, I like writing. Then when I started going to law school, in the middle of studying, I told my parents, you know what? I think I messed it up. What I really want to be is a journalist. And I almost changed careers, but at that moment, my parents convinced me, like, you know, lawyers are great journalists, right? And I got that. And then by those random things in life, I had the great accident of falling into HR and I fall in love. So what I can tell you is when I was a kid, I never said, when I grow up, I want to be an HR professional. That I can say was not the case.
Great. And on reading and writing, I mean, there seem to be many talents in you that already emerged when you were young. It's art, reading, and writing. That's what I hear. Do you remember moments when you really started loving arts.
Yeah. So I'll show you something, Stefan, that maybe, please, because I still love it. So for those that are listening, I'm showing Stefan the wall in my office, which has more or less 150 post-it notes with different cartoons that I, or doodles that I do all day long, right? So when I'm in a meeting, the way that I used to pay attention is I literally have my post-it notes and I start drawing. So if I really want to pay attention, I go back to the art. If I can use the word again, it's cartoons or it's very simple drawings, but it brings me back to my calm space and it allows me to concentrate. So I cannot go back and say much more of how that would play a key role in my life in the future. What I can share with you and with the audience is that I still am very connected with it. And now with little kids, I just love sitting down with them and painting and drawing and doing stuff with them.
Awesome. And you said in the pre-conversation that we both have two kids. Your kids are young. Do they already like drawing and arts like you?
The big one, quote to quote, she's 6 years old. She loves drawing. So she's drawing all the time and painting and coloring. The little one, which is 2 years old, she's like mimicking her sister and like painting, especially where she shouldn't, like in the floor, in the carpet, and in all the forbidden places in the walls. So I think the talent is there, a bit more raw for now. But yeah, both seem to have that artist edge.
Awesome. You also are a very good writer because I follow your LinkedIn posts and they are very well written. They are insightful. They are to the point. They very well blend thinking and feeling. When did you discover your talent for writing?
So I wrote for the school newspaper since I was very young, then for the university newspaper. One of my grandfathers, he was a writer himself, right? So I think I had a bit of that in my veins. Specifically on LinkedIn and these more short messages, I started writing during the pandemic. So before that, I used LinkedIn like everybody, like, hey, we just won a great place to work or whatever, right? All the corporate stuff, sharing good news from my job in the companies where I worked for. But then in the pandemic, the first post that I put that became viral, it said something like, I finally have the office of my dreams. I live very near to it. I have my own bathroom. It's a closed space. It's blah, blah, blah. Great, amazing coffee. Yes, I work from home. And that was very early in the pandemic. And that post, Stefan, it got like 500,000 views. All the other posts that I put, again, work related, I don't know, 1,500, 200, very, very little. But this exploded. Then a couple of months later, I went to visit my parents who lived in a different city than Bogota, where I live.
Yeah.
And I took a picture of my father's desk, which had three screens. So the computer screen, it had his phone, and it had an old Casio calculator, and it was like put in a standing up. And I put, again, a post on LinkedIn and I said, this is the desk of my father. Imagine which is the most important screen for him. And of course, it was the Casio calculator. Yeah. And that post also went mega viral. So I think you start getting, you get the rush of the, I have to be very transparent, right? Of the likes, of the views and everything. But my greatest discovery was when I started writing my own authentic reflections, and then I threw in a few leadership ideas completely disconnected to my employer, let's put it that way. The engagement grew and grew and grew. And that was 5 years ago, and it has not stopped since. And then it became a book and everything that we have already discussed. So again, I had written before, but like this kind of writing and the engagement it got, it started around 5 years ago.
Fantastic. Well done. You also touched upon it, that you start did working on leadership, and you in your professional role right now are also instrumental in unleashing the leadership that's good for the company, its customers, and the people working in your company. So when was the first time that you realized the impact leadership had on you?
I recall one time, Stefan. So very early in my career, I had the opportunity. I was working for Coca-Cola, and I had the opportunity to relocate to Mexico. And in Mexico, I had this boss. His name is Juan Dominguez. Nowadays, a very good and close friend and mentor. He was mega tough, right? Like the tough kind of boss. And then one day, he asks me to do something. Like, Juan Pablo, I need you to do X thing. Doesn't matter. I don't remember. What I remember, like if it was yesterday, was what happened. Because I told him like, Juan, but I think that's very difficult because of this and this. And he stopped everything. And in a very determined way, he said, Juan Pablo, when I ask you to do something, I expect from you that you go out and eat the world. Comerse el mundo in Spanish. You go out and eat the world. You do everything that it's in your hands to accomplish the task. If after you have done everything, you are not able to accomplish the task, you can come to me if we need to change the plan, if I need to make a phone call, if we need to do something different, if I need to do it myself, you can fully count on me. What I do not accept is that I ask you for something and that your first response is that it cannot be done or that it is very difficult.
Wow.
And Stefan, that has resonated with me 20 years later. Yeah. You cannot imagine how hard. So much that nowadays, when you ask me for something or my boss asks me for something, unless it's something that goes against my values, right? But you most likely will hear me say, count on it or consider it done. Even if I had no clue how to do it and I need to go out like crazy to find out how to do things. And that's a strong memory of the impact that leadership can have, right? And again, this guy is now a good friend. I was telling you before we started the interview, I'm going to Mexico later this month and I'm planning and I will meet with him because he had such a strong impact. I would have 1,000 more stories, but I think that's a good example of the impact that leadership can have in a person.
Yeah, it's a brilliant example. So just refusing the answer, I can't, and expecting someone to give his best, literally to give his best. I love this term, you eat the world.
Exactly. You go out and eat the world. The world. Those were his words, yeah.
I love it because it resonates also. Not only, I find it very relevant for leadership because the way you set your mind frames possibilities. And I think it, so many people too often just say, I can't, while in reality, they just don't want it enough. There are not many things we can't. There are some things that are difficult. I can't jump off a skyscraper without a parachute, without probably dying, right? That I understand. I can't do things against natural laws. But everything else, I may not be ready to pay the price, or I may not want it enough. Fine, but I can't is often an excuse. And I love the way how your boss just nailed it by saying, eat the world. I love it. Thank you.
I remember it now laughing, right? I also remember that in the moment I almost cried, right? He was tough. But again, it was such a powerful message.
Yeah. On that moment, let's get back into that moment, Juan Pablo. How did it make you feel in the moment he told you?
So let me go back one step. This guy was my second boss. My first boss was the most respectful person, Stefan, that I have ever met in my life. So he would be the kind of guy that, or boss, that would call me. At that time, we used extensions, right, in the offices. So he would call me to my extension, and I was an intern at that time. Hey, Juan Pablo, can I please bother you with something? And I'm like, yeah, of course, you are my boss, right? Then I go to Mexico and this other boss, he was like, he would call me, and previous experience now, he would call me, Juan Pablo, please come to my office. And then I would be finishing an email or something and taking a few seconds more, right? The phone would ring 10 seconds afterwards, like, oh, Juan Pablo, what part of now was not clear? I need you now in my office, right? But for me, so to answer your question, because I came from that different style and now I had this, that created so much, I'm going to say, tension in my head. But at the end, that's what I now recognize some way as rebellious and respectful, right? Because this boss in Mexico, he was so rebellious. He was trying to challenge the statu quo all the time. Yeah. My other boss, who I also love and was a great mentor, he was all about relationships, respect, taking care of others. So mixing those two is what I now see was very powerful in my life. In the moment, to answer your question, when Juan Carlos, my boss in Mexico, told me that, I think it had a double effect. On one hand, I honestly almost cried because he was tough and he was being tough with me. At the same time, very fast, I saw his message, and he truly meant what he was saying, right? And actually, what I learned and what was most valuable is he was not doubting me, he was not challenging me for doubting him. He was challenging me for doubting myself, right? Like, hey, you can do this. Go out, eat the world, right? I fully have your back, because his message was, if after doing everything you cannot make it, fully count on me. That was amazingly powerful. So it was a mix. It was hard to listen to that. I was probably 24, 25 years old, at the same time, mega educational. So much again that so many years afterwards, I'm talking about that in a podcast.
Absolutely. And you've written a book that maybe not coincidentally contains both of those different leadership styles, so respectful and rebellious, in the title of your book. I just changed in my mind the next question, because I think it's more about a balance rather than a difference. Has any of those two different leadership styles of your first and your second boss had bigger impact on you?
When I was writing the book, when I was starting to write the book, I wrote Tal Ben-Shahar. So I had the privilege to study with Tal Ben-Shahar, who is very famous, like the happiness professor, the positive psychology professor in Harvard. And I took a training with him in Massachusetts. It was a certificate in positive psychology, and we kept in touch. And I shared with him at the beginning of writing the book, hey, Tal, I'm writing this. Do you have any advice? And I gave him the general idea. Do you have any advice? And he said, Juan Pablo, I recommend that you investigate the concept of the genius of the and from Jim Collins, the famous author of From Good to Great. And Jim Collins has this concept, which he calls the genius of the and versus the tyranny of the or. And I really got into that concept, and it was great advice from Tal, and actually I did use it a lot in the book. And I connect this with your question, because all the time, more than one or the other, what I've tried to do is to truly blend the two and consider the and element. And I can give you one example of that, because you're asking what has served the most. There was one time when I was working in 3M, there was a very big global restructuring that at the time the company called Advanced 3M. And Advanced 3M was changing the way we were working across the organization. Mm-hmm. We had no clue what was going to happen. There was a lot of anxiety, as you can imagine, in these mega global restructurings. And at one point, Kristen Ludgate, who was 3M CHRO at that time, she put a global HR town hall and she presented the structure of the future. And the structure of the future had this big role, which was the HR director for Latin America. It was called People Relations and Inclusion Director. Finding difficult ways of just saying HR, right? And I took a print screen of what she presented.
Yeah.
And I sent that print screen to my boss, and I put the subject of the email. I sent her an email with that print screen, and the subject, I put letter. And then the email said, "Dear Santa, as advanced 3M, meaning the restructuring process continues to advance, I would like to let you know what I would like to be my Christmas gift." And again, the print screen with that role. That was a very big role because at that time I was the head of HR for Colombia. And for those that are familiarized with the corporate environment in Latin America, typically Mexico and Brazil are the big operations, right? Huge revenue, large populations. Then other countries like Colombia, Chile, Argentina, Peru are like in a next smaller phase. So typically when you were in a leadership role in a country like Colombia, you would aspire to move to a country like Mexico or Brazil. That would be a great career step. This role was the boss of those positions. I didn't hear anything back. So I said, I hit send, right? And then hours start going by and I don't hear anything back. And I start saying, did I go too far? Was that too ambitious? Was that too informal, right? Because dear Santa, my letter to Santa Claus, yeah. Right? It was informal indeed. So I start making movies in my head. And then like 3 hours later, the person that was my boss at the time, she replies and she says like, "Ha ha ha, JP, you made my day. I will be a good Christmas elf and I will let Santa know of your wishes." She and I, we never discussed that. Other than that, we never discussed that exchange of messages. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, like 3 weeks later, I get an ask from 3MCHRO asking me if I wanted to participate for that position, the one that I had put in my... No one made reference to my email. No one ever replied other than that.
Yeah.
And long story short, I ended up getting that position to lead HR for 3M for Latin America, which again was a huge step for my career at that time. For me, that's an example of being rebellious in the sense of challenging the statu quo, of being authentic, of trying to do things different, of changing and taking the reign of my own destiny, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time, it was respectful. It was an ask. It was put in playful words. I was not demanding anything. It was like, if you don't give me this, I will leave the company, or it wasn't any kind of threat. And again, and at the end, I got it. I cannot say for sure that email was the cause for getting it. But because of what I believe and what I have seen in many occasions on my life, I'm pretty confident that showing that rebellious and respectful way of wanting it truly made a difference for actually getting it. So that's a very long answer, Stefan, to say, I think more than the one of the other or the other, it has actually been the combination of the two that has had the most powerful effect.
Yeah, thank you. And that resonates a lot with me on many angles, for both the power of and versus or. I remember when I was a young guy, like 19, 20, I decided to slow. I reconstructed the way I take decisions. I think I'm taking decisions now much faster than I did when I was a young man. I bought another mistake, though, which is I'm sometimes taking binary decisions, maybe too fast, rather than keeping the and open long enough. Yeah. So it makes me reflect my own way of taking decisions. And the other one, I think, is it might be interesting to many of the people listening to us right now, is about how should you best actively manage your own career or influence your own career? There are some cultures out in the world where my impression is people hesitate. I've just spent 5 days working in Shanghai for a global client of ours in a vision and strategy project. I met many Chinese who were very strong, I think, in what they've done, but they might have hesitated to speak up and initiate their own career development upwards. And I myself, again, as a youngster, probably hesitated, and many others will do as well. So what would you suggest is a good end or a good balance to influence your own career in a respectful manner?
Yeah. So I think three ideas come to mind, Stefan. So the first one, and I have said this in other talks, like talking with university students or like trainees, it's about, I hope this translates well from Spanish, but putting your nose where no one has invited you, meaning being curious and getting involved in stuff that no one has asked you to do so. When I started my career in Coca-Cola as an intern, I was asked to translate documents just because I spoke English, and there was a very big lawsuit in a court in Florida. This was a massive lawsuit from a union. And I could have said, like, hey, I didn't go to law school to translate documents, right? And play the cocky card. But instead, I started getting very curious on what I was translating. Then I got a very good grasp around the case. And from translations, I got asked, you know what, can you please do a summary? And then after a summary, can you please do an analysis on this? And then when the lawyers were coming from the US, or when the people from the corporate in Mexico were coming, I would participate in these meetings of super high executives, or at that time I saw it like that, were super confidential, where an intern would have normally never been part. But because I had really been curious about it, I got very much involved. And actually, that's how I got an offer to move to Mexico. So the first one is, if you really want to manage your career upwards, so I'm going to make that parenthesis, up, because some people might want to manage their career staying where they are. But if they have the passion and the ambition to grow, put your nose where no one has asked you to do so. The second one, Stefan, I would say it's around showing your interest. When I was 10 years in Coca-Cola, I got a call from a headhunter to move to another Colombian company, to a Colombian company called Alpina. It's a dairy company, coincidentally founded by Swiss immigrants to Colombia, but that's another story.
Yeah.
And it was my dream job. It was my dream job. And I developed a strategy in my head. So I said, you know what? I'm going to make myself desired, right? So I'm going to play the card of like the forbidden fruit. So I went to the headhunter, I had the interviews, and then to the interview with the CHRO of Alpina. And I had a very good interview in the sense that I answered everything. I shared my point of views, what I would do differently. I brought a lot of ideas to the table, but I remained very serious, right? Like poker face. I'm not going to show my interest. I'm not going to look needy or like I really want this. And my dumb strategy was to say like they will be even more interested, right? Then I go out and at the end, I don't even ask what are the next steps. I just say, thank you very much for the conversation. And I leave. I go out. I say, I nailed it. I'm going to get an offer. This was amazing. My answers were amazing. Then the next day, I don't hear anything. 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. And I start getting anxious, like I really want this. But I don't want to call the headhunter either, because I say, if I do, then I'm going to show needy and my great strategy is going to go to the floor. But after 2 weeks, I have to call the headhunter. So I call. Yeah. And this was a Venezuelan woman. And she answers the phone and I say, hey, Maite, I want to know if what's the status with the process, what happened. And she said, no, Juan Pablo, so later today, we're going to make an offer to the final candidate. And I'm like, no, very bad luck. Okay. And she makes a pause and she says, but you know what, Juan Pablo, I'm very intrigued by your call. This is very surprising. And I say, why? And she says, because Claudia, who was the hiring manager, she really loved your profile and everything that you said, But for her, it was completely evident that you were not interested in the position. So then I changed like an idiot from the mind to the heart. And I'm like, no, mate, you gotta tell Claudia that I really want the role, that I'm super passionate about it, that it's my dream. And she was like, Juan Pablo, breathe. I don't think this is going to happen. This never happens, but let me, you know, there's only one chance for a first impression, but let me talk with her. Mm-hmm. We hung up. I'm feeling like the most stupid person in the world. Then like 20 minutes later, she calls back and she says, Juan Pablo, I have good news. This typically never happens, but Claudia wants to see you tomorrow in her office at 7 a.m. Can you make it? And I say, I will ditch anything else that I have. And so it was the next day. It was 6:59 a.m. in Claudia's office. And I was like crazy. I think I didn't even let her speak. I'm like, Claudia, I really want this. I would do this and this other. And blah, 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 blah. And at the end, she was honestly laughing. And she said, Juan Pablo, if you had told me that before, the role was yours. But if you're still so enthusiastic about it, here's the offer for the position.
Wow.
So I learned, and this is my second point. When you want something, and this includes career-wise, you need to show all and express with verbal language, non-verbal language, all your full interest and enthusiasm. Maybe you'll get it, maybe you'll not, but at least everything that was in your hands would have been done so that you can aim for an opportunity.
Yeah, brilliant.
And
I love
the third one, and this one is shorter, I think you got to be a career masochist in the sense that if things don't go the way you wanted them to go, you got to put the full burden in your shoulders, even if it's unfair, even if it's a bit exaggerated. But that's the only way that you can actually change the outcome in the future. If you just say, no, I was very good, but the boss was very unfair, or they have a favorite, or this is so sad, I have no clue what I did wrong, or you will not be able to change the future. So again, a bit masochist, but I always put the outcome, good or bad, of what happens, and again, including career-wise, on my shoulders.
Yeah, so you and fully own the outcome, whatever it is. You own
whatever
the outcome.
Whatever it is, exactly. Yeah,
very good advice. Now, a question to essence. I think there are many ways, particularly for people like you and me, and probably everyone now on the call, who like the topic of leadership, to describe it in length, in different versions of length. What I'm more interested in, because it's more memorable and often sticks much better with people's minds, is the essence. Can you articulate the essence of good leadership for you?
Yes, I think I can give it a try. So, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, Stefan, for me, the essence of good leadership is to be rebellious and respectful, to rebel against the statu quo, to create a new, better future, and to use respect as the base of everything that you do. So I think rebelliousness plus respectfulness, it's the perfect mix of good leadership and inspiring leadership.
Yeah, thank you.
You change things and you do it in a constructive manner.
Yeah, thank you very much. One of the biggest challenges for me in my work, being a leadership catalyst, helping companies transform their leadership culture from current to a better place, is narcissists. People who have too big of an ego need. And that ego need comes in the way of the necessary change. What these people lack is respect. And based on this, I wonder, question to you, Juan Pablo, can you teach respect?
That is a very tough question. So first, I fully agree. I think being a narcissist is a way of being disrespectful because you just think that you are more than others, period, or that you are above others. So that part of the diagnosis. I think more than teaching respect, Stefan, so you need to have a seed in your heart that was planted by your grandparents or your parents or your school teachers or something, right? What I think you can do is help raise self-awareness. There's many people that truly and honestly think they are respectful or they have respect as a value, but they have certain behaviors that others perceive as disrespectful. So if you have someone that is, in the essence, to use your word, or inherently a good person, I think what you can help is make them realize how and why and in which ways and specifically with which behaviors they are acting in such a way that can be perceived as disrespectful and what they can do to elevate that. I had a case a few years ago where a group of sales people came to me and to speak up against their boss. They were saying that their boss was that she was very they didn't use the word disrespectful, but that she didn't recognize their work and that she was too tough and that she was only oriented on results but was not empathetic, right? And I listened to them. Perfect. Thank you very much for speaking up. Then I go and I have a conversation with this person. And since the first moment, I notice how this person is so passionate about her work, like she really wants to achieve results. She really wants to take the company to another level. I feel the positive intentions around growing the business, right? So I start listening to her and I ask her, how does she interact with her team and everything? At the end, I identified that she had her, I like to call them the equalizers of rebelliousness and the equalizer of respect, right? So instead of a dial that you move from one to another, it's two separate equalizers. So I saw that her rebelliousness equalizers was mega high. Her respect was a bit low, not to say very low. And I never tried to reduce her rebelliousness. What I tried to coach her was how she could elevate her level of or her equalizer of respect. And we spoke and she told me how her meetings with her team were, etc. So I gave her a few advice, right? And she was thankfully very receptive. Like 3 weeks later, a month later, I'm in the hallway in the company and I accidentally meet one of the salespeople that had come to my office. And I ask him, like when a doctor asks a patient, hey, how are things progressing? How's the medicine working? Like, hey, how are things going? And he said, no, Juan Pablo, super good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Things are better. And then he says something that also got very much in fire in my head. So he said, no, Juan Pablo, now when she calls us, before asking for the sales number, she asks us, how are we? How we are? And then in the sales meetings, she will recognize those that are doing well. To be honest, Stefan, in my head, I was like, that's so insufficient. I'm not satisfied. But the person was truly happy about it. And then I reflected, like, okay, it's a step, right? So to your point, if people can be more respectful, of course I would have loved that the transformation was significantly more profound, but at least you could see that this person was making an effort to be more self-aware, to be more empathetic, and to elevate her equalizer of respect. So I wish leaders, especially those that have it lower, could transform more, but I really value when they take right steps into elevating their respect when that's what they need to work on.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And I think you have reasons to feel proud of the change you started at the time, because you unleashed a significant improvement that had a significant impact on those affected. So why were you not happy with yourself at the time?
More than with myself, it was with the situation, right? Because I think basically the guy was saying me that this lady now said, thank you, right? That she would say hello and thank you, right? Which I think I, in the Maslow of leadership, pyramid of leadership, that's like the bottom. But to your point, I see what you're saying. You got to start from somewhere. But that was it. Like, very basic, but still progress.
Yeah, I really like this concept you're sharing of don't try to dial down, dial up. And self-awareness instead of teaching. Yeah, don't teach respect, but make people become aware of the impact they are having. I think this is a concept that in the last couple of months kept re-coming into my professional work, no matter whether we worked in Shanghai or in the US or in Europe, there is such a difference between our intent as leaders and our impact on others, at least sometimes with some people. Or let me quote numbers. I've recently come across a research where as many as 97% of all people asked said, yes, I think I am a strong leader. 97%. Mm-hmm. And then the next question was, have you ever had a really bad boss in your career? Which by definition, Juan Pablo, if there was no discrepancy between self-perception and impact on others, the number must have been like 3 or maybe 10 if you had a few double countings or triple bosses. But the number was 69. Yeah, so that just confirmed to me, and I am in the same park. I'm not better. Right. I'm pointing my finger at the phenomenon, not at people. Yeah. The phenomenon is this inconsistent self-reflection, this inconsistent awareness of the impact we are having on others. Yeah? Anonymously, I'm sharing, I've done about 350 one-to-one executive coaching programs over my career. And I'm sharing here a concept that you as an HRD, you might be familiar with.
I love it, right?
Yeah. The insights tool. And the first one, I love this description, yeah. Be brief, be bright, be gone.
I know that. I had those in my previous office. So I was yellow, red, green, blue. Those are my colors.
We have the same colors.
I think you showed red first. For me, it was yellow, then red.
And that's my profile. Mine is yellow first.
So mine, the difference is blue is the last one. So
you're blue last. Okay.
Exactly. Okay.
It's just amazing to... I like the simplicity of this. Mm. And I like this condensation into just very few words of the essence of the respective color, right?
If you want to hear something funny, Stefan, because I think self-awareness is so important, and specifically the Insights tool is so powerful, that the first time I did it, and it gives you this amazing report. So I think there's a wheel at the end, and I'm like in the inspiration motivator or something like that. But what I like the most is that it has all of these instructions, like how to talk with Juan Pablo, how not to talk with him, etc. This was many years ago, like 9 years ago. But then I offered my wife, like, hey, you should really do that. So I wrote to Insights, hey, I want to buy these. And they told me, no, we only work with companies or with certified coaches. But I couldn't do that through my company because I wanted to. So I told them, no, it's that I want for my wife to do this because it was so awesome. And they gave me a complimentary test and my wife took it. And literally we sat down like if it were our own instruction manuals Yeah. And it helped us understand a lot why she gets angry with some stuff, why I get angry, right? And
So
self-awareness is so extremely powerful and so much the base of a lot of stuff in relationships, in leadership, in team efficiency, and so forth.
Yeah, I agree. Now, in one of your many brilliant LinkedIn posts, you recently shared a true story about the impact of leading from the heart. Would you mind sharing a brief summary?
Yeah. So when I finally got that head of HR for Latin America role, very soon afterwards, we had to make a decision to let go a very high executive in Brazil. And it was a very complex case, no need to go into details. I was supposed to go to Brazil to do it, but that was at the beginning of the pandemic, so I couldn't fly at the moment. So my HR leader in Brazil, who used to be my peer, now I was her boss, she accidentally sent an email with confidential information about this termination to the wrong recipient, who was actually like very close to the person that we were terminating. It was like a big confidentiality breach. So she calls me crying and she says, no, Juan Pablo, this happened. I messed up. I already wrote to the other person asking him to delete the email. And I was like, okay, no, don't worry. We will manage. I tried to be empathetic, but in true honesty, I was a bit cold because at the end, a mistake had been committed, right? So I called my boss in Minnesota, his name, Mike Otteson, an amazing boss. And I called Mike and I said, Mike, I have to tell you that this happened. I thought he was going to be very angry with the HR director in Brazil. But I was acting like, hey, you got to make yourself responsible of your acts, right? So Mike, this happened. And his response was, oh, Juan Pablo, I am so sorry for this person that she's leaving this. It's so awful when those kind of things happen. Please let her know that she has our full support. Ask her if she needs anything from us and everything. I felt like the most awful leader ever, right? But not happy with that, Stefan. He sent her an email directly to her saying how he remembered at least two occasions on his own career where similar things had happened to him and how that still had a mark on his heart. And again, reinforcing the full trust and support that the company had on her. Again, I felt like, then she called me again crying, but this time it was tears of joy because her broken heart had been mended. And basically I learned three lessons or learned one lesson. When someone from your team commits a mistake, you have three options. You can either pursue culprits, right, and fire someone who made that mistake, needs to go. You could be like very mildly empathetic, like I was more or less ish. Or you can lead with full humanity, right? Which my boss did. And my learning is when it's a good person, when it's an honest mistake, when in this case she was honest as well to bring it, to put it on top of the table, the difference of leading with full humanity and leading from the heart makes a true difference in the future. It creates a culture of psychological safety. It creates a culture of connectedness, of trust at a level. So it's when mistakes happen, when shit hits the fan, as they say. I hope the vocabulary is apt for your podcast. When leaders truly can make a difference in the culture that they are building. And that was a very, I felt really like a very poor leader that time. But yeah, that was awesome. And we afterwards, we laughed and we actually took the reflection from it. But that was the story that you're talking about.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing it here and also on LinkedIn, which made me ask the question here because I think it's powerful. I think it reminds me also of four moments that I think shape culture. It's who you hire, who you promote, how you give feedback, and how you let people go.
Yeah. And I would add, and who you let go too, right?
And who you let go. I agree. Yeah. I agree. Who you let go, who you promote, and who you let go, right? Yeah. And it also reminds me of this quote I once read, which is, you don't get the culture you deserve. You get the culture you tolerate, right? So I'm allergic to toxicity, and I don't really have a lot of patience with people who behave in toxic manners. I think it's powerful what you say. It's also powerful how you share it as a reflection and as a learning for yourself. I think when people make mistakes, and when they make mistakes, they know matter. They anyway feel like a raw egg, right? If they come forward and share the mistake and take responsibility and really feel helpless, then I think it's a brilliant response from your boss to just give trust, lead with heart, and share, look, this has happened twice to myself. I know how you feel. Yeah. Thank you for sharing this. And this is a brilliant example of leadership that I think deserves being spread around the world, because that's how it should be, right? Because we are not leading machines. We are leading humans. Yeah. Brilliant.
It's in the book. Just to make some advertisement.
Yes, please feel free. We will link the link to your book here in the show notes so that people can get access faster. I'm going to buy it tonight because I'm really curious to read more about this concept of the respectful rebel that was the hook for this entire podcast, Juan Pablo. Now let's turn to your career so far. I assume the way you think about yourself, the way you think about leadership now has certainly evolved from the 24-year-old that you were when you joined the business world. Can you recall a particular moment that has redefined your view on leadership?
There was one time, Stefan, so when I was in this company, Alpina, that I finally got the job, that it was my dream job and everything after my idiotic trying to play hard to get, I went to be the second on board for HR. And my mission and my aim and what I did everything to was to get to the CHRO role, right, which was my boss. And they were hiring someone that had that succession potential. So I worked really hard for that, and at one moment, my boss moved to a different position, and I get called to the CEO's office, and I say, so I don't know yet that she's moving to another position, so I get called to the CEO's office, I go to the CEO's office, and he lets me know that my boss was moving to a new role. Immediately in my head, I'm like, I'm so happy, right? This is the moment where I'm going to be told that this is truly my dream come true, becoming a CHRO for the first time in my career. This is what I have been preparing for so long. And here I am in the right time, in the right moment. And then he delivers the news that I was not being appointed to the position. But to give the final blow, he lets me know that one person from my team, someone that reported in to me, someone that I had hired, that I had trained, was going to be appointed as CHRO. So he was now going to be my boss. Stefan, I cannot tell you, this has been the most strong ego-destroying moment of my whole life. There's nothing that I have felt in my life like what I felt in that instant. Mm-hmm. I cried. I broke down. It was like a punch in the in the face. I ask him if that's a final decision, and he says yes. So then I leave his office. This was a Friday, like 2 p.m. I don't even go back to my office to get my things, to get my jacket, to get my stuff. I literally go to the parking lot and I escape. I go to my house. I ditch everything. On my way home, I called Alberto Ramirez. He was another boss and very good mentor that I had in my career. And I'm like, Alberto, can you believe what they did to me? This is happening. I'm going to quit on Monday. I'm already thinking of my resignation letter because this is a humiliation and it's unacceptable. Mm. And he waits and he listens, right? And long story short, he makes me notice how immature it would be to do that, right? And he helps me notice, and then I notice it myself very strongly, that I was playing the role of a victim, there's nothing I hate more in life, and what I try to, and even from my HR role, what I try to advise others, right? Never to fall into that role. So of course I didn't quit on Monday, and I made the respectful decision of respecting my new boss. This guy was very, we're good friends now. He called me, he told me like, hey, and so he called me, hey, Juan Pablo, are you in the office? And I'm like, this was my new boss, right? And I'm like, no, I'm in my car to my way home. And he says, I fully understand. I want you to know that whatever happens, I will always see you as a mentor, right? So he was very kind. And I decided that I would respect the decision, that I would respect my new boss. At the same time, I decided that I had to rebel, not against the company, because the company had all the right to make the decision that they consider more appropriate, but to rebel against my circumstances, right? So I say, okay, the opportunity at this moment was not there. Mm-hmm. I will start opening my mind and being more proactive into exploring different opportunities.
Yeah.
And thankfully, a few months later, both out of being proactive, but also good coincidences, I got the role as HR, head of HR for 3M in Colombia, which led to an amazing different kind of path and career. But that moment, to your point on leadership, it showed me, it talked to me about vulnerability, about ego again, because I was convinced that there was no other alternative in my head other than I was the next CHRO, right? There was no space for another alternative in my head. And of course, again, it hit me in the face. So that was very defining for me as a leader. It ended up helping me a lot. At the end, I wouldn't be here in Switzerland talking to you if that had not happened, right? But it was a very hard moment, I can tell you that. Probably I felt worse than, and maybe this sounds very shallow, but worse than even when I have lost like family members or girlfriends ditch me in the past. This was a worse feeling than any of those.
Yeah. So apparently it really came completely out of the blue, completely unexpected.
Completely. All the feedback that I had received was super positive, etc.
Mm-hmm. Now, how has this shaped your view on leadership? Do you have a different attitude now to unexpected things?
So there's a follow-up to that story that helps answer your question, Stefan. So once I had made my head clear that I was going to opt for a new future, a few weeks after that happened, I had my new boss in place. I had to present to the board of Alpina the strategic plan of HR for the next 3 years. And Arturo, who was now my new boss, he was generous enough to allow me to present and to prepare the strategy and to be the one voicing it. Because I had already decided that I was leaving. So up to that point, I was very much playing the politics game of what do I need to say? What will I say that the CEO will want to listen, right? So I was very, I like licking boots and trying to to play of what did I had to do or say to continue growing in my career, right? Conscious or unconscious, and sometimes a mix of that, right? But this time, because again, I knew a few weeks ago that I was not appointed, I was confident that I was going to leave to pursue another opportunity. I had a very different approach in that presentation to the board. So I was particularly critical. I put everything of the strategy. I put all the obstacles that I saw in a very transparent and direct manner, still respectful, right? And still constructive, but I was way more aggressive than I would have typically done. I spoke about what I saw that the management team, how they were blocking the culture that we needed to build. So I was just, but I said, I don't care, I'm leaving. What is incredible, or what was incredible for me now, when I think it's not so incredible, but what was incredible for me at the moment was the moment that meeting finished, the CEO that had not given me the role, he says, Juan Pablo, can you come with me? And I'm like, of course. And he takes me to a corner and he says, I want to tell you that in these 3 years that I have been seeing you presenting, this has been the best presentation that you have ever given. And as many things, when you connect the dots at the end, what I took from that was, of course, a CEO does not want someone that is neither licking boots nor saying what they want to listen. They want someone that actually has the courage and the braveness to challenge things and to be rebellious and to challenge the statu quo. So that was what I took from that. And then what has helped me afterwards, I make my best effort, and something that has helped was since I started having head of HR roles, just authentically share your mind, try to change things for the better, be as direct as possible. Again, my nature is diplomatic and positive and constructive, but I never stop saying what I think should be done, even if I think it will be an uncomfortable truth or it will make some people feel bad or reshape things.
Yeah, thank you. I'm curious to read your book. Maybe I find an answer in there, but let me ask the question now as well. Between respect and rebelliousness, my experience is there are also some people who need to dial up rebelliousness. So what advice do you give leaders who need to get more rebellious?
Yeah. So actually, I believe, Stefan, it's more the amount of leaders that need to elevate their rebelliousness than those who need to elevate their respect. I think we have built organizations just because the way we educate people, right? So kids, they are inherently rebellious, right? They want to do their things. They don't care what others think about. They don't want to follow rules. But we teach them so hard on being disciplined, on being obedient. Then in school, we have grades to do that, right? You are being rebellious, so you fail the subject. We called your parents to tell them how bad of a kid you are, right? Yeah. I have a very good friend who has an amazing career in marketing, and he recently shared a letter from the school to me, a letter from 1997, where the school sent a letter to his parents saying how he was doodling all the time and not paying attention to teachers, and that he needed to change his attitude or else he would be expelled from school. It was that hard. Okay. This guy is a marketing genius, right? And fortunately, he got to stay in school and everything, and he never changed his attitude. But imagine if he would have done, if the school had succeeded on making him, because literally it said, your kid needs to change his attitude. Mm. So I always ask, how different would it have been if that letter would have said, hey, we have identified that your kid has an amazing creativity and imagination, and we strongly encourage him to continue developing those talents. At the same time, we request that he is more respectful of his teachers, of paying attention when they're talking, and so forth.
Yeah.
So I I say all of that to connect it to the present, because I think the system is designated to kill rebellious, right? In companies, when someone very rebellious comes, it's very common to say, oh no, he did not adapt or she did not adapt to how do we do things here, right? So that's not answering your question. That's a preface to the answer to your question, because just to say it's not only very relevant, it's actually what we need to do the most. So first, self-awareness, Stefan, I think. I received people that have read the book have told me, like, you know what? I really needed to get this shake because I was in a sea of mediocrity, right? I was doing my stuff, but I was not being rebellious. So I think it's one, help them be more self-aware. Two, show examples of how rebellious can look like. Three, give them the peace that rebellious does not necessarily mean being rude or being disrespectful, but that you can be both at the same time. And four, show the effect and the power, which is, and this, I will let people read the book to understand how this is portrayed there, but show examples of how when you increase your equalizer of rebelliousness, you can significantly advance faster in your life, in your career. And when you do it with respect, you do it in such a way that you leave a positive mark on others.
Yeah, cool. Thank you very much. I have two closing ones. The first one is comparing the present to the future. I occasionally am invited to give keynotes. And one of the subjects that is requested more frequently is change. And my keynote title for change is My Father, My Sons. My Father, My Sons includes the fact that my father ran one career in an industrial company. He was in the steel industry, he was fascinated by machines. And for about 35 years, he repaired the biggest steel pipe producing machines on the planet. One career. I have run three careers. The first one in the corporate that allowed me to learn and grow. The second one in two different corporate companies in very different industries. I went from consumer goods and healthcare to telecoms and beer. And the third one as a startup founder. And I'm lucky. I founded two startups and both succeed. Both are running. So I ran three careers. And my anticipation is that both your kids and mine will run five careers, five different careers, not just different jobs in competitive companies, but different careers. And I would even dare to say 2/3 of the industries that your and my children will ever work in don't even exist yet. Mm. So if anything changes in change, I mean, change is the only constant in humanity, in human history. But I do believe that the pace of change for your children and mine will be even higher than the pace of change is for me, at least. I mean, I'm much older than you, but at least the pace of change for me. So I think it's interesting to compare what is leadership today and what is leadership going to be once your kids will be in leadership roles, if they choose to do leadership work as part of their work life. Or a bit more sharp, what leadership trait do you believe is underrated today, but essential for the future?
Oof. I fully agree on the different lives and careers and what our kids are going to live, especially if you add the fact that there is a higher likelihood that they will reach 100 years old, if not more, right? So the world is changing in ways we cannot even imagine. I think there are a few elements of human skills and the typical soft skills, but maybe that underrated today, but essential in our future leadership trait. And to keep in the line of the conversation, I would describe it as constructive defiance, right? So it's about the courage to challenge what's broken, not for ego, but truly for progress, right? So what I see is too often organizations reward compliance disguised as collaboration. But I believe, and it's so hard to see the future, that the future belongs to leaders who can disagree with respect, speak uncomfortable truths, and still bring people with them, right? I think when I talk about respectful rebelliousness, I don't see that as a trait of leadership. I see that as leadership itself, right? So not very sophisticated, probably nothing very innovative, but if I would put it in words, I would label it as constructive defiance.
Yeah, constructive defiance. Thank you. And thinking about one element that is fueling the change right now and fueling the pace of change. Yeah. Industrialization took about 3 generations. My father's was the last one. Digitalization took 1 generation to change the way we work. AI will probably only take 10 years or less. So, and we reacted. I mean, we are offering an online program called Lightwolf Academy. It's a 1-year practical online leadership education that is enjoyed and used by young leaders and CEOs alike. And we've built a module, not about AI, but we've built a new module that's called Leading with AI, right? So how do I lead in a world where AI is a normal standard? On that note, and from your perspective, Juan Pablo, how does AI influence the way we lead?
Still too soon to tell, but I think that there's a couple of things where I anticipate it will change. One, around transparency. I think with both AI, but when you also add how legislation is moving, I just had a meeting earlier today around pay transparency, right? And I honestly believe it's a matter of a very short amount of time where everybody will know the salaries of everybody. And I use this as an HR example, right? But it's about a lot of things, right? So and the access to so many answers that AI gives, I think that's an element of transparency. And the other one is, I think AI will continue in many ways leveling the playing field, right? Because I can say that I have an MBA from Harvard or an LLM from MIT or whatever, you're right. But at the end, when AI and AI don't think it as we see it now in a phone or in a screen, but we will have that somehow embedded in your glasses or in a different kind of device, I think we are all going to be equally smart, right? And we're going to have access to so many things and knowledge. And so that's going to redefine a lot of experience. That's going to redefine a lot what being wise means and what having information means. I think that's going to fuel what you were saying around changing so often different industries, different jobs, different ways of thinking. So it's such a novel world that anything that you try to anticipate, it changes by the second. I will remain very curious, and I will invite everybody to remain very curious, but it would be a very big lie to try and predict the future.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. And I think transparency will be there, redefining, being wise. I like a lot. It's amazing to see what it does, and probably impossible to predict what it will really be, even just 10 years down the road. Now, let's close this wonderful conversation. I could go on for hours, but I'd like to give you the chance, Juan Pablo, to leave these many thousand people on the call now with either a question or a message that you would like to leave with our LightWolf Leadership podcast community. So what is one thought you would like to share with the audience?
My thought is rebelliousness plus respect equals inspiration. I believe people look up to leaders who they see can offer a better, different future, and that put the effort and work to get it done and to realize that future, right? While at the same time doing it in a respectful and constructive manner. That genius of the and. So just because I couldn't finish differently, a strong invitation as well to read my book, Respectful Rebels. It's on Amazon. You can find it in any place of the world where Amazon arrives.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you investing the time, Juan Pablo, to be here today for this conversation. I enjoyed it a lot, and I'm sure so did the many people on the call. I fully
and myself support... as well, Stefan. It was amazing.
Great. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it as well. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your experience. It's amazing to feel your positive openness. Also, thank you for sharing moments when you, in hindsight, would have done things slightly differently, because that's what we learn a lot from. I think too many companies still prefer sharing mainly or only best practices, while oftentimes you learn so much more from the things that do not go right first time around, but only second or third time around. So thank you for being a wonderful source of inspiration. I support your book. I will buy your book tonight. And I'd love to continue this exchange, Juan Pablo, outside this podcast, because it deserves to be continued. I noted down many things that you share and that you see, starting from your childhood as an artist, as a writer, as a reader, continued by this growth mindset, not expecting, not accepting the I can't as a response from your first boss. Or career management, put your nose where no one asks you to, or teaching respect. No, don't teach respect. Help raise the self-awareness all the way to AI and transparency, redefining being wise. You shared a lot of gold. I support your definition of leadership, which is respect and rebelliousness, and combining them and dialing both of them up. And I would also agree, while I sometimes get frustrated with narcissists who lack the respect, probably the world needs at least as much, if not more, people dialing up on their rebelliousness. Yeah, so it's been insightful. It's been teaching to me. It's been fun to have you on this call. And I thank you very much, dear Juan Pablo Velasquez. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan, and everyone.
Guys, I hope you enjoyed this. Just let us know your feedback, your questions. Buy the book, read it, comment on it. Go and watch the LinkedIn page from Juan Pablo if you haven't subscribed yet. It's a rich source of inspiration and heartfelt and well thought through impulse on creating a well-led world. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Take care and see you next time.